Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are partway through. We're almost done with the Rhode Island, or as they used to say, the Rogue Island ratification debates. And really, they were more of declarations and some recommended amendments. And so we are kind of going through those recommended amendments at this point in time. Anyway, as you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as I've already told you, but more importantly, RepublicReview.org. Now, as I'm going to get ready to go through these ratification debates, I have every bit of confidence. I am completely confirmed in my assertion here that the federal government has no intention, none, in undoing all of the unconstitutional powers. As a matter of fact, it flies. When people tell me, well, you know, why doesn't the president do this? As a matter of fact, I got in an argument with the president doing such a thing. The bottom line is, and this goes to a conversation that Ward Connerly and I had when I was doing an interview with him, because we see things eye to eye. The only way things can be done is they have to be done properly, because it's like the parents. The parents have to draw the line. You can't do this. When the child makes an assumption that they can do something and they continue to do it, and they just do it and do it, and then maybe they stop doing it to say, maybe we shouldn't do this. Well, that doesn't keep them from saying, well, you know what? Nobody said we couldn't do it, so we're going to go back to doing it. And we liked how things went when we were doing what we were doing. Only the states. The president does not have the authority to, he has the authority to veto these bills. He has the authority to stop them in their tracks, just like Madison did, just like Monroe did, just like Jackson did. These men stopped the Department of Transportation from being formed. But today they said you have to have an amendment. The states have to delegate the power. Now, if the states haven't delegated the power, then I'm here to tell you that what we're looking at is usurpation of states' powers. If the states don't want you to do it, then they won't give you the amendment. But if they don't ask for an amendment and they just tell the states, we're going to do this because we believe it's necessary and proper, or whatever clause they want to use, then I'm here to tell you that the states are culpable. But back to the president. The president does not have the power to stop unconstitutional government. And as a matter of fact, it is antithetical for anybody to assume the mantle of power such as presidency and say, well, look at all of this power I have, and then say, I want to get rid of it. That's almost like walking into your job as a CEO and saying, wow, look at all this money and all this corporate production and all these things that we're doing. I want to get rid of half of this. Because in some ways, people look at government as a positive, an exertion of power in serving people. Actually, it is really an exertion of power in subjugating, basically ruling and or enslaving people. We're going to create these regulations that you must follow. We're going to mandate. And that's what they do. Anyway, you're listening to the only show that actually points out the evidence, and we're actually going through the empirical data to prove to you that the evidence is overwhelming, that the general government does not have the power or authority to do any of the things that it is doing that it claims it can do. So with that, don't forget, please, if you haven't started, find out when the Constitution Party meets in your county or the nearby county, or reach out to the state. Who knows? They may need you to actually form a party and actually give you a template for your bylaws and everything else so that you can get enough people interested in forming the Constitution Party in your county. Okay? And don't forget to reach out to the NLA. We got a lot to do. And in all honesty, are you done if you just get involved in politics? No. As a citizen, we have to be doing a lot more. A lot more. You have to be involved in the not only the politics of your community and county, as well as the overall holding government accountable, as well as the overall militia, your security, your your community watches, and so forth. So anyway, we'll probably get into the details more specifically in the coming weeks, maybe coming months, something like that. Anyway, like I said, we were just wrapping up the Rhode Island, and so now we're going to be going into the Maryland after we're done with the Rhode Island. So let me wrap up Rhode Island. So we were on the 13th. We just stopped on that no monies be borrowed on the credit of the United States without the assent of two-thirds of the senators and representatives present in each house. In other words, creating a real problem. But you know what? If you think about it, when one looks at, you know, whether Congress should be able to spend money that they're supposed to spend, absolutely. If they have an enumerated power, they should be able to spend the money, and it really should only require a basic majority. What should require a two-thirds majority is if they're going to violate the Constitution. That way, they have a little bit more security in saying, hey, you know, we got to spend this money because we shouldn't, for a non-enumerated power. But bottom line, they don't even know what that is. And so I just kind of think, when we go down this path of creating a justification for spending something they don't have a justification for, it's just a dangerous path. It's a dangerous precedence that we shouldn't set. Anyway, 14th. That the Congress shall not declare war without the concurrence of two-thirds of the senators and representatives present in each house. Now, there is a very clear delineation as to who is to declare war, and that requires the people first, the representatives of the people, and not the Senate. Because you got to understand, the Senate has different responsibilities, and that's why when we go through Article 1, you'll find that it is the House of Representatives, and those are the people that we're supposed to get rid of when they put us in jeopardy, when they actually put our butts on the line by having to go fight a war. Anyway, the 15th, that the words, quote, without the consent of Congress, close quote, in the seventh clause in the ninth section of the first article of the Constitution be expunged. So they're already finding these little things that they want to get rid of. 16th, that no judge of the Supreme Court of the United States shall hold any other office under the United States or any of them, nor shall any officer appointed by Congress or by the President and Senate of the United States be permitted to hold any office under the appointment of any of the states. Now, this does not mean the same thing with emoluments and titles by princes and so forth, which was the original 13th Amendment. 17th, as a traffic tending to establish or continue the slavery of any part of the human species is disgraceful to the cause of liberty and humanity, that Congress shall, as soon as may be, promote and establish such laws and regulations as may effectually prevent the importation of slaves, very descriptive, into the United States. Oh, so what they're basically saying is that the 1808 clause wasn't descriptive enough. So the really interesting thing is, you got to remember, Rhode Island was not present at all for the Constitutional Convention. So they didn't have anybody that, you know, had any profound knowledge. Oh, this is what we said, this is why we did this, nothing like that. So this is probably why they were flying blind and making some of the comments that they were making. 18th, that the state legislatures have power to recall, when they think it expedient, their federal senators and to send others in their stead. Well, I actually think that they can do that. when they were appointing them, I don't believe that that was really a problem, because I think that that was done at a state level. But, you know, once they got this thing going and nobody started questioning and start recognizing that they could do or have these powers or could apply these types of assertions. Anyway, 19th, that Congress have power to establish a uniform rule of inhabitancy or settlement of the poor of the different states throughout the United States. And so it's interesting that they were actually thinking in a progressive way of trying to ensure that there were settlements for the poor. And so anyway, that Congress erect no, this is the 20th, that Congress erect no company with exclusive advantages of commerce. Now, Congress does not have that power. So what they're doing is they're trying to create a negativity. I want you to understand that Congress does not have, where is it delegated to them that they can erect a company with exclusive advantages of commerce, such as the Federal Reserve? It doesn't exist. They don't have that power. Just because they didn't list the nugatory, it still has to be formally delegated to the federal government via an amendment. That's why we have an enumerated constitution. And so we will be right back, and we just basically got one more to do when we come back, and then we'll jump into Maryland. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so what we have now is the final amendment recommended, and so one of the things I want to point out is that, as I already said, because Rhode Island wasn't there, they started diving into some things that, you know, were either obvious or some things that were already explained by the Federalists in these other debates. So they just made these assertions. And, you know, I know Rhode Island wasn't in a vacuum. As a matter of fact, I know that they were already trying to contend and trying to argue against the Constitution as the beginning of the ratifications and so forth, and they held out. I mean, look how long they held out. The federal government was in existence for 2 years, or, well, it was beginning its second year before Rhode Island. So, because May 29th, 1790 was a good year after, and because they had just ratified it, now they have to have elections to create. So they didn't participate in really that second year. They, the first time they really had a chance to actually function with representation in this new government was in 1791. Anyway, back to the very last amendment, that when two members shall move or call for the ayes and nays, or the yeas and nays, I should say, ayes, they call it ayes, and nays on any question, they shall be entered on the journals of the houses respectively. One of the things that they didn't do is they didn't publish the Senate journal. As a matter of fact, because Thomas Jefferson was, I believe, the vice president at the time when they started really getting organized. And that was under Adams, when they really started getting organized and creating their procedures, the parliamentary procedures and so forth. Thomas Jefferson was the one that basically made, I'll just say, it was his suggestion that these things not be public. And so he felt that what the states were needing to do and the things that they needed to be concerned about was more specific and understood at the state level and not at the people level. And so they didn't want to be questioned and or what have you. But bottom line, over time, they started realizing that, you know, the people can handle the truth and the transparency. So they actually did start publishing. And I believe if you go to the Library of Congress, you will find both the Annals and the Congressional Globe that includes both the House and the Senate. It's not that they didn't keep a journal. They just didn't publish it. Now, Rhode Island wanted both houses to publish that journal. Now, and again, they were still working out, and I think the Constitution gave each house the power to determine what their procedures, protocols, and processes would be. So anyway, this was done in convention at Newport, in the county of Newport, in the get this, when did Rhode Island actually change their name? Because they were called the State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. That was the name of the state. They weren't just called Rhode Island. So, I don't know. That's something I've never looked up, but it's kind of interesting that they actually had to go and formally change their name to drop the Plantations or the Providence of Plantations and Providence Plantations. Anyway, I'm going to guess that had more to do with the stigma that was associated with slavery and plantations. What do you think? You think that's a good guess? So the next one, the next ratification debate is Maryland. And Maryland basically published theirs on the 21st of 1788. And so when we look at the states and when they actually ratified the Constitution, well, let me see here. Maryland in order here. Sorry. Maryland actually... So they signed this on the 21st, but they became a state on the 28th, 7 days later. Now, this is not the full, and as a matter of fact, when I get into some of these, it'll actually say, because the next one, which is Connecticut, says fragment of the debates. Most of these debates are not full, because many of the states actually did debate it, but they just didn't either include it. And some people claim that they got destroyed in the fire in Washington, D.C., from the 1812 war, and the states actually had their own copies. That's why the documentation history on the Constitution, or the ratification of the Constitution, the HRC, in the University of Wisconsin, actually has all of the debates. That's where the treasure of the nation lies. Anyway, the following facts disclosing the conduct of the late Convention of Maryland are submitted to the serious consideration of the citizens of the state. On Monday, the 21st of April, the convention met in Annapolis and elected Honorable George Platter, Esquire, president. On Tuesday, they established rules for conduct of business, and on the same day, the question was propounded to the convention. And so, anyway, they basically went through and they kind of give you a timeline, and then they provide these resolutions. Resolved that a committee be appointed to take into consideration and report to this House on Monday morning next a draft of such amendments and alterations as may be thought necessary in the proposed Constitution for the United States, to be recommended to the consideration of the people of the state, if approved by this convention, and Mr. Paca, Mr. Johnson, so forth and so on, be appointed to a committee for that purpose. And so they basically divided themselves up. The following amendments to the proposed Constitution were separately agreed to by the committee, most of them by a unanimous vote, and all of them by a great majority. One, that Congress shall exercise no power but what is expressly delegated by this Constitution. So I want you to understand that the paradigm and the language may have changed between one state to the other, but they all wanted an amendment, because in the Articles of Confederation, that language actually existed. And what Madison and the Federalists basically did was they said, look, these are the only powers that we've delegated to them. They can't delegate anymore. So specifically, okay, the Articles of Confederation stated this so that you understand why the states were kind of constantly using this exact same language. Article 2 of the Articles of Confederation state, each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right, which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. Now, the problem with the Articles of Confederation was a perceived general powers and general assumptions that there were no Bill of Rights to restrain the federal government. Now, when they created this Constitution, they painstakingly went through the process of making sure that every power was enumerated. And this is why when we go through the ratification debates, you'll constantly see this argument that if it is not enumerated, they can't meddle with it. So as they defined this to the states, and as they went through the ratification process, the states bought into the concept that this is a specified power of attorney and or an enumerated constitution, which is basically the same thing, that they do not have power to do anything that is not enumerated. So they actually explain this amendment, this First Amendment, by this amendment, the general powers given to Congress by the first and last paragraphs of the eighth section of Article 1 and the second paragraph of the sixth article should be in a great measure restrained those dangerous expressions by which the Bill of Rights and Constitutions of the several states may be repealed by the laws of Congress in some degree moderated and the exercise of constructive powers wholly prevented. So the take-home on all of this, my friends, is the fact that, first off, the Constitution is enumerated and these are the only powers they can execute. That's it. In addition, they did get a Bill of Rights, and they do have an amendment that expressly tells them that that Congress or the federal government cannot exercise powers that have not been delegated to them, period. So what more do you need other than just wasting more paper and time to constantly go, well, did we expressly delegate that? No. If it is not delegated, it doesn't exist. Who cares about the word expressly, right? It's just an adverb, adjective, or what have you. It's just a modifier to the delegated. If it's not delegated, they can't meddle with it. That's exactly what George Nicholas said. The Second Amendment, that there shall be a trial by jury in all criminal cases according to the course of proceeding in the state where the offense is committed, and that there be no appeal matter of fact or second trial after acquittal. But this provision shall not extend to such cases as may rise in the government of the land and or naval forces. 3, that in all actions or debts or contracts and other controversies respecting property of which the inferior federal courts have jurisdiction, the trial of facts shall be by jury, if required by either party, and that it be expressly declared that the state courts in such cases have a concurrent jurisdiction with the federal courts, with an appeal from either only as a matter of law to the Supreme Federal Court if the matter in dispute be of the value of a certain amount of dollars. So this is where they start injecting that only over cases that are worth this much money should go to the federal court system. So anyway, we're going into break. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, now keep in mind, as we go through all of these different ratification debates, we're giving you a unanimous paradigm. There's no state that believes that the federal government should have these freedoms to be able to do whatever they want to do. This is empirical data. This is why we have to go through these things, so that you completely understand how this Constitution was defined by each of the states, that each of the states wanted these hardcore constraints. Anyway, and so as we just laid out before we went into break, that they were trying to create this threshold of dollars to keep the federal courts from having jurisdiction. That the inferior federal court shall not have jurisdiction of less than blank dollars, and that there may be an appeal in all cases of revenue, as well to matter of fact as law. And Congress may give the state courts jurisdiction of the revenue cases for such forms and in such manner as they may think proper. 5, that in all cases of trespasses done within the body of a county and within the inferior federal jurisdiction, the party injured shall be entitled to a trial by jury in the state where the injury shall be committed, and that it be expressly declared that the state courts in such cases shall have concurrent jurisdiction with the federal courts, and there shall be no appeal from either, except on matter of law, and that no person be exempt from such jurisdiction and trial, but ambassadors and ministers privileged by the law of nations. Interesting. See, they recognized the law of nations back then, that they were a civil society, that, you know, laws governed all nations, that the federal courts shall be entitled to jurisdiction by fictions or collusions, shall not be entitled to jurisdiction by fictions or collusion, that the federal judges do not hold any other office of profit, such as a law office or something like that, or receive the profits of any other office under Congress during the time they hold commission. Now, what they basically describe these is as follows, because this is their explanation for the first set of amendments. The great objects of these amendments were, first, to secure the trial by jury in all cases, the boasted birthright of Englishmen and their descendants, and the palladium of civil liberty, and to prevent the appeal from fact which not only destroys that trial in civil cases, but by construction may also elude it in criminal cases, a mode of proceeding both expensive and burdensome, and which by blending law and fact will destroy all checks on the judiciary authority, rendering it almost impossible to convict judges of corruption, and may lay the foundation of that gradual and silent attack on individuals by which the approaches of tyranny become irresistible. Second, to give a concurrent jurisdiction to the state courts in order that Congress may not be compelled, as they will be under the present form, to establish inferior federal courts, which, if not numerous, are very expensive. The circumstance of the people being unequal to the increased expense of double courts and double officers, an arrangement that will render the law so complicated and confused that many men cannot know to conduct themselves with safety to their persons or property, the great and only security of freedom. Third, to give such jurisdiction to the state courts that the transient foreigners and persons from other states committing injuries in this state may be amenable to the state. This says he, but it's a typo. May be amenable to the state whose laws they violate and whose citizens they injure. Fourth and finally, to prevent an extension of the federal jurisdiction, which may in all probability will swallow up the jurisdictions and consequently sap those rules of descent and regulations of personal property by which men hold their estates. And lastly, to secure the independence of the federal judges, to whom the happiness of the people of this great continent will be so greatly committed by the extensive powers assigned them. Now, I want you to think about what they kind of said here. They wanted to keep the cost of government down, and they wanted to keep its jurisdiction very limited to those things that are enumerated. Imagine if a person didn't have if the federal government doesn't have the right over life, they don't have the right over, because it's not enumerated to them, over education, over health care. In other words, every case that goes up in a state court, whether that be health insurance, whether that be automotive insurance, it doesn't matter what it is. There's no way the general government, or housing, labor, the general government has no jurisdiction in these things. But why is it that these things constantly find their way into federal court? Because the federal courts have been aggrandizing their jurisdiction outside those enumerated powers. It's that simple, friends. The Eighth Amendment that they wanted to that they actually hardcore recommended. Eight, that all warrants without oath or affirmation of a person consciously scrupulous of taking an oath to search suspected places or seize any person or his property are grievous and oppressive. And all general warrants to search suspected places or to apprehend any person suspected without naming or describing the place or person in special are dangerous and not be granted and should not ought be granted. This amendment was considered indispensable by many of the committee for Congress having the power to lay excises, the horror of a free people, by which our dwelling houses, those castles considered to be so sacred by English law, will be laid open to insolence and oppression of office. There could be no constitutional check provided that would prove so effectual a safeguard to our citizens. General warrants, too, the great engine by which power may destroy those individuals who resist usurpation, are also hereby forbidden to those magistrates who are to administer the general government. Now, I can tell you that they were very, very concerned. Anybody that became vocal to the government could easily be isolated and or picked on and all of a sudden be harassed with warrants, searches, and so forth. We see this today, my friends. We actually see this today. Nine, that no soldier be enlisted for longer than 4 years except in time of war and then only during the war. 10, that soldiers not be quartered in time of peace upon private houses without the consent of their owners. That no mutiny bill continue in force longer than 2 years. These were the only checks that could be obtained against the unlimited power of raising and regulating standing armies. Now, let me be clear. A standing army is a federalized militia for a very specific purpose. In other words, Congress shall have the power to call forth a militia to execute the laws of the Union, to suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions, and or to fight the wars. The natural enemy of freedom, and even with these restrictions, the new Congress will not be under such constitutional restraints as the Parliament of Great Britain, restraints which our ancestors have bled to establish and which have hitherto preserved the liberty of their posterity, not prosperity. Anyway, 12, that the freedom of the press be inviolable preserved. In prosecutions in the federal courts for libels, the constitutional preservation of this great and fundamental right may prove invaluable, the freedom of the press. Huh. Yeah, what freedom of the press? Anyway, and I'll bet you anything that Maryland may not even have in their own constitution that the freedom of the press shall be preserved or anything like that. I could be wrong, but nine times out of ten, the states were not applying these same kinds of restrictions on themselves. This provision to restrain the powers of Congress over the militia, and so the 13th, actually, let me, I've given you the description or the explanation before I gave you the amendment. The militia shall not be subject to martial law except in time of war, invasion, or rebellion. This provision to restrain the powers of Congress over the militia, although by no means so ample as that provided by the Magna Carta and the other great fundamental and constitutional laws of Great Britain, it being contrary to the Magna Carta to punish a freeman by martial law in time of peace and murder to execute him. It may prove an inestimable check for all other provisions in favor of the rights of men would be vain and nugatory if the power of subjecting all men able to bear arms to martial law at any moment should remain vested in Congress. Thus far the amendments were agreed to. And so here are the amendments that they proposed that they actually did not forward. And it's kind of interesting that they're forwarding them, but these were the ones that failed the muster of getting approved. So why include them? Isn't that interesting? They even included this stuff. So where are the actual debates of who said what and how they defined it in some of these states? Isn't it ironic that they'll tell you, well, amendments that didn't get there, but we didn't include our testimony, or somehow these things are being withheld, and for what reason, I don't know. The following amendments were laid before the committee and negated by a majority. They actually say negatived, and it's improper. It's hard for me to pronounce a word that is improper. Believe it or not, I can make up words, but negatived. Anyway, that the militia, unless selected by lot or voluntarily enlisted, shall not be marched beyond the limits of the adjoining state without the consent of the legislative executive. Now, George Mason of Virginia wanted this exact same amendment. He did not get it, nor did any of the states that requested it, as you can see, because there's no amendment that restrains the federal government of how they use the militia. 2, that the Congress shall have no power to alter or change the time, place, or manner of holding elections for senators or representatives unless a state shall neglect to make regulations or to execute its regulations or shall be prevented by invasion or rebellion, in which cases only may interfere until the cause be removed. 3, that in every law of Congress imposing direct taxes, the collection thereof shall be suspended for a certain reasonable time therein, limited and on payment. So anyway, let me actually get this right. Therein limited and on payment of the sum by any state by the time appointed, such taxes shall not be collected. 4, that no standing army shall be kept up in time of unless the consent of 2/3 of the members present of each branch of service. So in other words, they can't keep a standing army unless there is 2/3 of the present members. They don't have to have full quorum. So in other words, they don't have to have 66. They just have to have 2/3 of those present. That the president shall not command the army in person without the consent of Congress. So in other words, they're trying to keep these kings from being the despots that they can be, like Obama. That the president shall not, okay, I already did that. 6, that no treaty shall be effectual to repeal or abrogate the constitutions or bill of rights of the states or any part thereof. And so this is something that's interesting because how they came to this conclusion that a treaty shall effectually repeal the constitutions or the Bill of Rights of the states or any of the protections of the states when Congress has no delegated power to be able to do that. Now, not that they haven't done this and crossed this line, but those treaties are unconstitutional. They can only make treaties that they have within their enumerated powers. They can't make a treaty that gives away your guns. They can't make a treaty that mandates that we can't make cars because they don't have that power. It's not delegated to them. Anyway, no regulation of commerce or navigation act shall be made unless the consent of two-thirds of the members of each branch of Congress. So in other words, it requires two-thirds of each branch to create regulations regarding commerce or navigation. And so we'll be hitting the break and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I hope you're getting, you know, the tip of the iceberg that we're showing you is that the states did not trust a central government. They just didn't. And so as they let this beast out of the barn, well, actually, it wasn't a beast because Congress was, you know, pretty good at staying within their boundaries. They started aggrandizing, and we get into that after we're done with the ratification debates, such as the Assumption Act and so forth. Anyway, this is the Eighth Amendment that didn't cut muster, that they didn't provide forward as, so maybe what they did was they included these so that if there were other states that actually recommended these exact same things, that maybe they would add these, because obviously, as they stated, these were not positively agreed upon. They could not get enough people to give them a majority. So why would they include these? Other than the fact as an appeasement, possibly, to those who actually submitted these, and maybe they may have been leaders, but the rest of the body didn't say, well, like Henry. If Henry's the guy in charge or whoever's the leadership of the delegates, they said, you know what, we're going to put it this way so that we can forward them so they'll see these other amendments, but they'll know that these weren't necessarily a positive. But if there are other states that included these same things, then there we go. Anyway, 8, to no member of Congress shall be eligible to any office of profit under Congress during the time for which he shall be appointed. In other words, you only got one salary, baby. That's it. You can't make any money doing anything else. And this should actually be the same as a person investing, because bottom line is are the stock markets a federally controlled thing? Yeah, they are. And because they're federally controlled, they have inside, you know, views of laws and those types of things that are going to impact. This is why their insider trading should actually be construed as unconstitutional. Anyway, that the Congress shall have no power to lay a poll tax. Only the states wanted to possess this power. that no person conscientiously scrupulous of bearing arms in any case shall be compelled personally to serve as a soldier. They could serve as an admin, as a cook, but not as a trigger puller. This was a well-founded concern and a paradigm of all of the states and all government, that every person with a conscientious objection should not be compelled. I mean, your conscientious assertions, your positions, I do not want vaccinations, I do not want to kill people, that was considered one of our most sacred rights. And look at what they're trying to do with mandates and forcing people to do this. That there be a responsible counsel to the president. 12, that there be no national religion established by law, but that all persons be equally entitled to protection in their religious liberty. Got to understand that there was a concern that the Catholic Church might take over the government. States, and actually Maryland at the time, had the Anglican Church as the state-sponsored church. 13, that all imposts and duties laid by Congress shall be placed to the credit of the state in which the same shall be collected and be deducted out of such state's quota of general or common expenses of the government. 14, that every man hath a right to petition the legislature for the redress of grievances in a peaceable and orderly manner. So here is an amendment that they suggested that actually made it into the Bill of Rights. There you go. 15, that it be declared that all persons entrusted with the legislative or executive powers of government are the trustees and servants of the people, and as such accountable for their conduct. Wherefore, whenever the ends of government are perverted, and public liberty manifestly endangered, and all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may, and of the right to, reform the old or establish a new government. The doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive to the good and happiness of mankind. And then they go on to this goes back to the whole concept of the Constitutional Convention, that they clearly understood that the established governments, the state governments, were the problem in not giving the central government enough power. Anyway, they go on and they have all the yays and the nays and what they're forwarding and the negatives, who voted against it, and so forth. And so this basically puts to rest the Maryland debates on the Constitution. Okay, so now we get to the Connecticut debates. Now, the Connecticut debates were held January 4th, 1788. And one of the things, let me make sure, because I have no idea how long these went, so I'm going to go through this real quick. And one will find, wow, this is kind of interesting, that there really is no amendments. Why did they not add any amendments to the ratification? Well, that didn't happen until Massachusetts did it a little later on in the month. So, interesting. This is really not the debates. I think that they do get into some discussions, and this is a good 14 pages long. What I want to do is I kind of want to read these, but I'm going to tell you that there's really nothing that goes into the enumerated powers, and there is nothing here that goes into jurisdiction or anything like that. They kind of talk about the existing government, the government of England, and so forth. I mean, if you want to read the Connecticut debates, but again, this is a fragment of the debates. This is not the full insights of the debates. Where are the Connecticut debates? Again, you'll have to get these from the documentation history of the ratification of the Constitution, which is at the University of Wisconsin. That's what they call it, the DHRC. Anyway, so what we're going to do, because I don't want to just necessarily just read these, so I think what we're going to do is we're going to just plow into, we're going to move into what we call more of the heated debates, and there's a good 58 pages here for the South Carolina debates, and with the amount of time that we have left, I'm going to forego this. So what I will do is I will tell you, in looking at each of these debates, and as they delineate the people, they delineate the people by county. And they delineate all those people who, you know, were for, against, or so forth. What I want you to understand is that when the framers started looking at their government and, you know, in breaking away from England, they wanted to have to, and wanted to make sure that they couldn't create a mass populist control of government or a mob rule. And so one of the things that were clearly stated during the Constitutional Convention was that the states wanted to maintain an equality, that they didn't want Virginia, Massachusetts, and the more populated states to have greater control over government. And so the checks and balances that they started creating with the House of Representatives and the Senate, because remember, even if you could get a bill through the population mob, because the House of Representatives was apportioned by the population. So Virginia and these popular states had obviously more people there representing them. And they could easily get the business done that they wanted done to get a majority, especially those things that favored those larger states. Well, then it would have to go to the Senate, and the Senate with equality, where Virginia only had two votes, just like every other state had only two votes, and it kept a check from tyrannical types of laws coming out of the House of Representatives. This is why the states, when they started forming their government, started going down the path of giving counties representation and breaking representation down by counties, even for the people. In other words, a person or the people of the county had a representative in their state legislature at a minimum, just like each state. Like Liz Cheney is the only and the hated representative of the state of Wyoming. And so even if it was a low populated county, they at least had one person representing them. So why am I telling you this? Because we're hoping that as we start getting organized with the National Liberty Alliance and start creating these counties, that the counties, these red counties, can take the muster and actually drive for a constitutional convention to look at the state constitutions and form a constitution that is actually constitutional and maintaining the representation of the people. Why? Well, because in a constitutional convention, you wipe away the apportionment of people because each county gets one vote, just like each state gets one vote. And so if you're wondering how can we fix these real huge problems we have, well, first we got to get reasonably and equally informed, because we're all reasonable, but the equally informed is the most important part. We'll be back with the next debate, and I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, we hope you're beginning to recognize the true treasure these ratification debates really mean to reclaiming our republic. And now?
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.